Chapter 36, Planting Higher Seeds. Teaching Mataji, the corporal's mother, was a real pleasure. She had, it seems, done some yoga in her early years, obviously with a person who really understood how yoga works. And so she came to her classes warm and open and ready to be taught. Katrin had shown me a whole series of yoga poses that were especially good for older people, especially effective at loosening up bent and frozen joints in a way which was gentle, but which also quickly produced noticeable results for anyone as quietly dedicated as Mataji. She also took to giving and taking in silent sitting, like a fish to water. She took an obvious joy in rescuing people from their problems and sending them their fondest hopes, all on her breath. It was this inner work on the channels, I think, that changed her hands so quickly. When the sergeant led Mataji into my cell for her classes, she seemed increasingly embarrassed by my crossbar on the door. And then finally, he just took the bar home one night and came back with it the next day, set it in its place, and called for me to have a look. Mataji and I had just finished a class. "See how it works?" he smiled. "Push on your door." I did, and the crossbar suddenly separated into two, and the door swung freely. "Took me a while to get it right, you see," he said proudly. "I sawed it here," he pointed to the edge of the door, "and then sanded it down and then painted it all of this matching color, you see. So if anyone comes and visits the jail unexpectedly, say the superintendent," he raised his eyebrows, "then it will just look like a regular crossbar, you see. But for most days, well, then you can just escort Mataji out onto the front porch in a civilized manner, and no one has to feel, you know, locked in." I smiled at how little the jail was feeling like a jail, and the sergeant and I tried out the door to walk Mataji to the porch. She stepped out to the road and turned around and gave us a big wave, and we waved back with sunny smiles. And then the two of us stood at the rail, enjoying the day, and something suddenly occurred to me. "Sergeant, sir," I began, and he turned to face me, the sun still there in his smile. "Yes, Miss Friday?" "Sergeant, there is something I've always wanted to ask you. I hope you won't find me too forward for asking." "Why, go right ahead," he smiled on. "Anything at all, Miss Friday." "Well, you see, the captain and I were talking once a while back, and he mentioned something just offhand." "What's that?" the sergeant asked, gazing up at the sky. "Well, he said, do you remember the very first day in the guardhouse on the road?" "Of course I do," he smiled. "It changed my life. Changed all our lives." "Yes, but well, you see, the captain said, and I don't know if that's exactly what he meant, you see, but he said that, well, you were actually looking out for me in the first place, that someone had actually warned you to look out for me." The sergeant turned back to me with a little look of surprise. "Well, now that you mention it, yeah, we were told to keep an eye out for someone matching your description. Why, I'd forgotten about that altogether." "Well, yes, but may I, Sergeant, ask who it was that told you this?" He gazed at me innocently. "Well, of course, Miss Friday. It was Busuku, you see." "Third form of self-control," I announced, and the captain hunkered down with a serious look. I'd been worried about that. "Captain, sir, don't look so serious." And then I paused and added, "I hope you don't think I'm getting preachy or anything. I really don't mean to." "Well," he admitted, "there are times when it reminds me of lectures on proper behavior that I used to get from my grandmother." My face got red and I felt flustered for a minute. "I guess it might sound like that sometimes," I said finally, "but it's different, you see. I don't mean to sound like I'm telling you that you're a bad boy, like I'm telling you what you can and cannot do. I mean, I just want you to know what the master says are a few most powerful ways to plant good seeds. And the good seeds, you see, they're not like some kind of rules or obligations. It's not something you have to do or something you're supposed to do. Good seeds are just, well, like regular seeds that you plant in your garden. I'm just going over for you what the master says are the easiest and strongest seeds you can plant to get the most wonderful, lovely, juicy watermelons you can imagine. Now, once you've heard about them, it's really all up to you what you do. The captain nodded knowingly. You are basically offering me a free ticket to create whatever beautiful thing I desire. I get that. I can put up with the occasional preachiness. I know where it's all going. Then he paused for a moment and added, but the prospect of being able to bring about anything I wish for, it brings up an old question. What's that? I asked. I mean, a long time ago, you told me I should learn to overcome my preferences. I believe we were referring to the boat pose, where you bust your guts, as opposed to the dead man's pose, where you basically lie down and enjoy a nice, hard-earned rest. Yeah, I said. Then later you said that liking some things and disliking other things was a big part of a chain of events that causes pain to come back to us again, the self-perpetuating circle. Yes, I said calmly, as Katrin would have. And then somewhere in there, you said that it was fine to like some things and dislike other things. Yes, I said. And now you've just reminded me that all this self-control stuff is really just part of a master plan to get me whatever I want. I nodded yet again. Well, I even have a problem with that, he declared and clacked his pen down firmly on the desk. How's that? I said. What's the use of having things go your way for a while, he said. Everybody knows it's going to change again anyway. What's the use of even trying? Ah, that, I said, and as usual, it was a very fine question. First things first, I said. When I said not to get wrapped up with preferences, I was talking about things that had already happened. Things that had already happened. Seeds that had already gone off in your mind. I mean, if someone serves you a meal, and there are some things on the plate that you really enjoy and some that you don't care much for, but they're all types of food that are perfectly healthy for you, well then, go ahead and eat, ignoring your preferences, because this is what your seeds have brought you in the moment, and it's too late to change them once they've ripened. And getting upset, you see, that would be falling into a kind of liking and disliking that causes our pain and keeps it going. Something I like to call stupid liking and stupid disliking. Stupid liking is looking at something you want and trying to struggle against others to get it. Stupid disliking is trying to get away from something that you don't want, even if you have to hurt someone to do so. Because neither one of these works in the long run, you see. If it worked to get you what you want, then maybe, just maybe, it would make sense to hurt someone else or tell a lie. But they don't. They're not what gets you what you want, because they don't always get you what you want, so they can't be the absolute source of getting you what you want. And what really gets you what you want, what always works to get you what you want, is choosing what you want to happen in the future. Then, very purposely, planting the seeds that will make it happen. And these seeds always involve taking care of others. Which is why we're covering the ways we can slip up and not take care of others, doing things that are not nice to others. Because if we can do the opposite of these not nice things, then we can plant the best seeds of all. And that brings us to intelligent liking and intelligent disliking. Wish for anything you want. You should wish for anything you want. We live to fulfill our wishes, our pure desires, great and small. But then go about getting it in the right way, which is to say, in the way that really works, in the only way that works, by planting the right seeds. Be a gardener and then sit back and watch the garden grow. But what we wish for, urged the captain, that's the question. What's the use of planting seeds for things that will not last? Oh, yes, I said. It's the same thing we spoke about that night in your home. He nodded gracefully. It was a pleasant memory for both of us. The problem you're raising is covered first by the Master when he says, the torment of change is caused by these same seeds of suffering. You see, on a deeper level, you're right, as you were that night at your house. Suppose someone has gotten too heavy and is hoping to do yoga and it might be able to help them lose weight. And suppose that they meet up with a good teacher who not only knows all the best yoga poses for them, but also understands how yoga really works. They know that the poses will have to be targeted at the root of the problem, at blockages in the subtle channels. And they also know that this will only work if the person has collected the right seeds by working very hard on being kind to others. And then, say the whole process is successful and the right seeds get planted or woken up, if they are already there. And because of this, the yoga poses themselves have the hoped-for effect on the inner channels, and the person, through regular and continued practice, is able to become slender, strong, and healthy again. And your question is such a good question. It is, why should we even try to become slender and strong? Because we all know that sooner or later, it will change again. If nothing else, we will lose the slender, strong body itself, will grow older and older, and finally die. And what the Master is saying here is, yes, this is a problem. This is what we call the torment of change. Bad seeds, well, no one needs to say, they are bad because they bring us obvious pain. They make us see obvious pain. But even good seeds, too, bring their own type of pain, the pain of change, because whatever seeds we have planted past goodness to others, which now ripen and make us see ourselves slender and strong, they wear out simply by making us be slender and strong for so many weeks or months. And then it's like we're thrown back to zero, which usually feels worse if we arrive at it fresh than if we'd simply always been there from before. Say if the weight problem had just stayed with us as it was. It's the change that hurts us most. And so what the Master is saying, you see, is that all of the seeds, really, good or bad, are seeds of suffering. And I guess it's actually a good place here in the middle of explaining self-control, the art of planting good seeds and avoiding bad seeds, that we explain how to plant the higher kinds of seeds, the good seeds that never wear out. The captain nodded excitedly. That's exactly what I'm wondering about. I was hoping that there might be a kind of higher good seed, because in my heart, and I guess everyone else is the same really, I don't want to learn the same way of making good things happen and then later have to face the same old disappointment as they begin to fade. Exactly, I said happily. He was so good at getting down into the middle of his own feelings and expressing his real thoughts about things. To put it simply, there is a way to plant higher good seeds, but I think we should go over it now that we're focused on it, and then we'll go on to the other forms of self-control on your next class. Agreed? The captain smiled gratefully. Now, the great books throughout time have said that you need two things to turn a regular good seed, one that will bring you something you hope for and then just wear out, into higher seeds. Higher good seeds, one that will never wear out. The first thing you need, the first step you need to take, is described by the Master like this. Use the eye of wisdom, which comes from mastering those three. What eye of wisdom? Asked the captain. And which three? He said with exasperation. Why does the Master always seem to be talking in code? I grinned with understanding. I always wondered the same thing, and my teacher used to say that in the old days everyone knew all these things already, and the book was just sort of a shorthand for remembering. The first step to planting a higher type of good seed in your mind is to look upon the good things you're doing with the eye of wisdom, even as you do it. Let's say you've been working really hard on that form of self-control where you don't harm anyone. And you're getting so good at it that now it's graduated into doing all kinds of kind things on a daily level to promote other people's physical health and well-being. It's actually what you were doing already, say, by teaching yoga to the sergeant and the corporal. The captain looked excited, just remembering his students. There's nothing that feels more rewarding than passing all these things on to others once you've learned them yourself. And that's because the tremendous seeds you plant as you pass them on. So let's say you've got the corporal sitting down on the floor in the Lord of Fishes pose, turned around to the back so he can work off a little of that belly of his that his mom's wonderful flatbread builds. The first thing you do is you just decide you want this good seed planted at a higher level. You focus on the idea. This is the same practice of focus that we were talking about before, and it is the first of the three that the master is mentioning. Then you concentrate on what's going on. You fix your mind there. And this is the same, the fixation that we talked about before. You hold your mind on the idea of making this good deed plant a higher seed. This is essential during the actual moments that the seed is being planted, while you're actually physically reaching out and helping the corporal with his pose, and also when you reflect back on it later and enjoy the good thing you did, which incidentally goes a long way in making the new seed firm and strong. This concentration or fixation is the second of the master's three here. Then lastly, there is what the master elsewhere calls perfect meditation, which in this case is actually just thinking very hard as you help the corporal about what is really happening. I mean, Captain, you tell me, what would happen if as you were sitting here helping the corporal with the pose, you suddenly began to remember very strongly that thing about the pen and the cow? The captain turned his head and gazed out the window to collect his thoughts. Well, I suppose, first of all, I'd think about how the yoga poses that the corporal was doing were really only sort of neutral, I guess you could say. I mean, I guess I'd think about how whether they worked for him really depended on whether he had good seeds in his mind that would ripen and change him deep down on the level of his channels. And I suppose that I'd think about the seeds in my own mind going off even as I watched the corporal. I mean, I'd know that really the whole class was sort of neutral or blank or what we'd call empty by itself, but only in the sense that if I happened to see the class work out successfully for the corporal, it would really only be because I had good seeds going off in my mind, making me see something very good happening, something I had really hoped would happen. And so really, I said, the whole scene would be imbued with an awareness of how things are not themselves until your own seeds make you see them that way. And focusing and fixing your mind on this meditation or line of thinking as the class goes on is an art itself. If you get good at it, if you master it, then you have what is called the eye of wisdom. You're looking at the class with the three parts of the eye of wisdom, focusing on your thoughts, fixing them there, then running through the idea of the pen and the cow. And the master feels so strongly about these three, he devotes a great deal of his book to describing the powerful things you can do if you use them all together frequently. He also gives them their own name, which we heard him mention way back in his description of the Sun Channel. He calls them the combined effort. And over again, he tells us how this combined effort can plant higher good seeds, seeds so powerful that they cause a complete transformation in our body and our mind and our entire world. And so there it is, the first step to planting good seeds that won't wear out. As you do good for others, as you do your gardening with the seeds in your own mind, using kindness itself, then simply think about it deeply. Everything I'm seeing here is coming from the seeds. And now, by doing good, I consciously and purposely plant good seeds for a better future. And simply the understanding of what you are doing as you do it transforms the very way it is planted. In terms of those subtle channels deep within us, you are planting seeds from the middle channel simply because you are understanding what you are doing as you do it. Seeds, even good seeds planted from either side of the two channels, ultimately always end up giving us pain. Seeds planted from the middle channel always end up eventually creating a perfect world for us. So remember, I finished. We sat for a moment in that warm glow of the definite possibility of a better world. And then I broke the spell and said, Captain, I think we'd better cover that second step in planting higher seeds at our next class. Otherwise, we'll never get to the poses today. He made a face, and I thought I heard a chuckle, whether from behind the wall or behind the door, I'm not quite sure. Chapter 37, Joy. Before the first class with Basuka's little flock of 8 boys, I pulled Ajit off to the side and I told him he would be teaching. He needed very powerful seeds to see his body change so much, so I seized the opportunity. Yes, Miss Friday, he said in that sunny, gentle way he had. I can tell them about the wonderful game with our breath during silent sitting, where you take away the bad things that happen to people and destroy those things with the flame of your heart, and where you send everyone everything their heart desires. And then when it's time to do the poses, I'll call you. I shook my head gently. No, Ajit, you don't understand. You will teach them everything, including the poses. He turned those lovely big brown eyes to me and looked as if he were about to cry. I mean, Miss Friday, I really am getting better, you see, and I know, and I thank you very much. And then he paused, struggling for the words. But you see, I can't even do many of the poses myself yet. Nonsense, I blurted back, as Katrin would have. Of course you can do them. You do all of them, every class we have together. Oh, no, he said quietly. No, it's not so, though you're kind to say it, Miss Friday. I mean, I try, always try to do the best I can, but my leg, you see, it changes everything else I try to do, and I know it. I know that with many poses, what I do still isn't what the pose is supposed to look like. I took his scarred cheek in my palm, and he let me, innocently. Did he know it already looked better? There's something you have to understand, Ajit. It's very simple and very true. A pose isn't supposed to look like anything. Nobody can do a pose so it looks perfect. A pose is perfect only when you're doing your very best, gazing steadily, breathing sweetly, and thinking of how it will help someone else. And I watch you every day doing lots of these perfect poses, and that's the kind of pose I want our wonderful boys to learn. He looked up at me with that brilliant faith of the young and smiled and nodded yes, he would teach, as asked. You'll be happy to know, I told the captain, that the second step to planting good seeds so they won't wear out is quite short and simple. And here the master says only, use joy. Now we have to talk a little about this joy because it's not your regular joy. The master mentions it in a famous list called the Infinite Thoughts, and here it means something altogether special. So we go back to you helping the corporal do a yoga pose that will make him healthier. You, as you preserve life, honor life, which is the opposite of harming others. And you are remembering to keep your mind on how everything going on at that very moment, you, the corporal, the poses, all three actually neutral or blank. They are in no way by themselves on their own side, but rather they are what they are because of the way that the seeds in your mind are making you see them. Just like the green stick that can equally be a pen or a tasty treat, two separate minds with very different seeds going off. And now, on top of that, you take the second step. You use what the master calls joy. Here, joy means wishing at the moment that you help the corporal, that the help you are giving him could bring him a higher kind of goal. I mean, not just a body that is healthier for a while and then gets old and dies anyway. Instead, you are wishing that this good deed could eventually help him rid his own mind and channels of every single last negative emotion forever. And then you make a wish that his channels could eventually become so pure and clear that it causes his body to become a body of living crystal light, in his mind to become perfect kindness and knowledge. Then you go one step more, you make your wish infinite. It has to be infinite if the seed you are planting is also to be infinite. And that's why this kind of joy is called an infinite thought. because at that moment, as you assist the corporal in an ordinary yoga pose, you must try to imagine that this small kindness you are doing will help turn every single living creature on countless worlds into the same perfect living crystal of kindness. And then, in the instant that the imprint of your small act is planted in your consciousness, it is filled with good wishes for an infinite number of living creatures. This incredible change in the seed as is planted in your mind makes it give a much different result as it begins to ripen. You see, the only way that every being alive now upon every planet there is can escape from death and reach a pure body of light is if they can actually carry out all the kinds of kindness that we've been talking about. And to do this, they need to understand how to do a true act of kindness infinitely and with an awareness of how seeds create things from neutral stuff. And no one could ever do this without carefully learning these ideas from a teacher who is already very familiar with them. And there comes a time, a very sacred moment in your life when you realize that it is you and you alone who must decide to be this teacher for countless living beings. It means being able to go to countless people on countless planets at the same time. It means knowing exactly what they need to learn, exactly when they should learn it. And it means knowing yourself, all there is to learn, because you have finished learning it and because you yourself have already undergone the ultimate transformation. And so what I mean is, if you just wish that infinite numbers of living beings could be helped in an ultimate way through even just a few minutes of helping the corporal with his tummy, then higher seeds will be planted in your own mind. And when they ripen, they will ripen in an ultimate way, in an infinite way. You will become a being of infinite light, helping infinite numbers of people on infinite planets reach this infinite ability as well, the ultimate form of happiness, the ultimate form of joy. And seeds planted with these wishes never wear out, you see. Every time a good seed ripens and brings you something good, say, a sound and healthy body, then you immediately turn around and use that healthy body to help others become healthy. And that puts the seeds back into the ground of your mind, growing infinitely more powerful each cycle, with each day, with each reinvestment of what the seeds have brought you. Over and over, taking the best seeds from this year's crop, planting them for next year's larger crop, onward to infinity until you become this being of light who can act for others infinitely, appearing at the side of anyone who needs you, in whatever form would best help them move towards their ultimate goal. The captain was staring at me, and then he said, "Are you actually suggesting that we change that radically? I mean, not just overcome death, not just reach the ability to help the sergeant and the corporal and my lost wife and child, but actually become able to help an infinite number of others at the same time?" "It is what each of us is meant to be," I said simply. And deep inside, we all know that. Chapter 38, Taking, Not Thinking. I opened the door to the captain's office a week later, and suddenly there was a loud banging noise from outside. The captain's eyes shot up with concern, and he flew past me out to the porch. I raced after him, followed closely by the sergeant. We clustered around the source of the noise, the corporal, standing on top of a little stool, hammering nails into the old wooden poles of the roof over the front porch. He suddenly caught sight of us and said brightly, "Oh my, time to start the captain's class? I'm sorry, I'll finish up later." And he leapt nimbly down to the porch, set the hammer on the stool, and slapped the dust from his hands. "Corporal," cried the captain, "Corporal, what are you doing?" The corporal looked confused. "Why, fixing the roof over the porch, sir. It's been half fallen down for as long as I can remember." "Yes, yes, I know," replied the captain, "but who told you to fix the roof?" "Why, no one, sir," answered the corporal. But the captain couldn't even hear it. He whirled around to the sergeant. "Sergeant, did you instruct the corporal here to fix the roof?" "Wasn't me," said the sergeant. The captain's eyes passed to me. "Not me," I peeped. "No one told me, sir," repeated the corporal, but still the words stopped short of the captain's ears. "Wasn't me," came a voice from the back. "Shut up, Busuku," yelled the sergeant automatically, and then glanced at me and added, "Please," in a whisper. And then we were all silent, and we just stared at the corporal altogether, dumbfounded. And he stared back in utter incomprehension and then finally said, "I'm going to need some more nails, Captain, sir." "Seeds," said the captain back at his desk, shaking his head in disbelief. "Seeds," I agreed in amazement, and then we got down to business. "I think this will make the rest of the forms of self-control more fun," I said hopefully, "because now we can imagine doing them with bigger things in mind." The captain hesitated a moment. "Miss Friday, I've been thinking about that idea of someone like me being able one day to show up in three different houses at the same time. On three different planets," I reminded him. Whatever. "Anyway, I need you to tell me a little more about how that works before I can really go about wishing for it," as I helped the corporal say. "I understand," I said, "and it's a fair request, but let's finish up the last three forms of self-control first, so you know what things are good seeds and to turn them into higher good seeds." Then I paused for a moment. "But one more thing to add about never telling a lie," I said. "You need to know that here in the Master's Short Book, it really covers three other very common things we do as well. The Master has only mentioned this one, speaking honestly, to stand for all the different ways that we can plant good seeds as we speak. And of all these different ways, there are three crucial ones that you should know about. The first is to avoid ever speaking in a way that might split other people up. That might make them upset at each other. It could be two people who are friends who already have a problem. It could even be that what you say to alienate one from the other is true, but we should never knowingly try to take people apart from one another. There is enough of that going on all the time, and it's so easy to fall into this just talking to people. If, on the other hand, we purposely try to encourage people to come together, if we emphasize to people the good things that they can share with each other, then we automatically prevent seeds that would make us have trouble in all of our own relationships. Next, here is to avoid ever saying something to someone else that would hurt their feelings. I mean, you could call it using harsh words. You know that even the words "have a nice day" can be said in a way that hurts someone's feelings. In the same way that "you are really a donkey" can be said in a friendly way, I suppose, mused the captain. "I mean, among the three of us officers," he added. "Oh yes," I smiled, "that's right, and then they aren't harsh words." Yeah, and then lastly, there's perhaps the most difficult of all, which is avoiding useless talk. I mean, most of us like to talk all day long, whether there's anything important to say or not. And aside from wasting a lot of our time, we are likely to slip up and say a good number of negative things whenever we have a long, rambling conversation with no particular purpose. And you know, I'm not talking to someone who's lonely or trying to be friendly. Then we can usually control what we say. I'm talking about just talking for talking's sake. I mean, explore the beauty of silence and get your friends to appreciate it too. And make it a goal with each other to try to be able to be together and enjoy each other's warmth and company even without talking. "I see," replied the captain, "and I do know what you mean. It's amazing how refreshing it can be to share silent moments with people who you really enjoy. I can see how all of these would plant some wonderful seeds, say, to live in a quiet, peaceful place, or to be exposed to beautiful music, or to be around friends who say sweet and heartfelt things all the time. I get that." "Good," I said. "So then let's go on. Now the Master says, the third form of self-control is never steal from another." Now everybody knows what stealing is, and everybody knows that it's not a good thing to do. And most of us would say that we aren't in the habit of stealing things. But as usual, we have to go deeper. We have to be sensitive to anything we ever do that could amount to stealing, even if we don't usually think of it that way. And then, if we ever hope to get close to that idea of becoming a kind of angelic being who could help an infinite number of other people all at once, well, then we have to go further and explore all the different ways we could give things to others rather than taking things away from them. I mean, what I sometimes fantasize about, I said, gazing at the ceiling, is a world where everyone already understands this stuff about things only being what the seeds in your mind make them to be. And then everyone is dying to be kind and helpful to each other. And so you have a new breed of burglar to develop. I mean, they sneak into people's houses at night and find their wallets and stuff money into them and then run away. The captain looked disturbed. It would put us out of business, he said, and then suddenly he brightened up. Or else there could, say, be a new breed of jail where we go and catch these new burglars and lock them up so people can come and have classes with them every day. Why, that's exactly what we're doing. That's what we're doing here, he said with pride. Yeah, I said and went on. Now, the point is that we want to become real experts at the art of non-stealing. Then it will plant some powerful seeds in us that change everything that's going on around us. The master even goes so far as to say, if you keep up this practice of never stealing from anyone, then there will come a time when people just come to you and offer you all the money you need. And if you really think carefully about it, you see, he's exactly right. I mean, if you are very wise about planting your seeds properly, always being careful to respect others' things, always giving others whatever you can, then of course there comes a day when your mind forces you to see whatever money you could ever need, and more simply, coming to you freely. Because all the money there is in the world, every last little penny in the entire economy of our planet, is being created by the minds of those who own and use the money, as surely as the pen. The captain stopped and thought for a moment. But there's a problem with that, he said uncertainly. What's that? I mean, suppose everyone in the world was very careful to respect everyone else's things all of the time and to be generous with what they already had themselves. According to you, then, everyone would begin getting wealthy, everyone, everywhere, at the same time. So, I said, well, where's it all going to come from? He said slowly, and then actually winced when the voice boomed from behind the wall. Seeds, of course. And then from behind the door, two more voices, one after the other. From the same place that all money comes from. Of course. The captain got red but smiled, and he looked up out of the window and mused. Everyone, everywhere, could have enough? The whole idea of there not being enough, the whole idea of how to capture or allocate or distribute wealth is simply one big, and then he yelled at the wall before the wall could yell at him, one big mistake of our entire civilization. For as long as it's been around. Bravo, returned the wall. I smiled and looked around. Surely at some point it was going to be less of a disruption just to have everyone come together for the class. Now, a few points about how to respect others' things on the very subtle level you need to if you want to see your own world change. Just some food for thought. I'm sure you'll come up with others. It seems to me that the most of us rarely outright steal something from another individual. I think rather we are more likely to get into common cultural situations that involve taking what is not ours, but perhaps not fully realizing it or rationalizing it. I think first that when we deal with public property, we get careless. I mean, just for a simple example, we could go into a public bathroom in a building in the city and say, leave behind a little mess. And that we would never leave in our own bathroom at home, and then someone will have to come and clean it up later. And if you think about it, then we have stolen a little bit of the most precious thing a person has, not their money, but the short, precious moments of their life. But what if they get paid to come in and clean up after people, objected the captain. That's even worse, I said. Remember, we said it was a public building, and so ultimately whatever it costs to clean up the little messes that we make, even just what it costs to clean up the litter that people thoughtlessly toss on the street, this money is being taken from the pockets of everyone around us, from everyone who gives us part of their hard-earned pay in the form of taxes. What I mean to say is we are often stealing, therefore, from everyone around us without thinking. And taxes themselves, I mean, we should feel it is an honor to help pay our fair share of the cost of things that we all use together, roads, bridges, systems for communication. But we are just selfish and we want the money for ourselves. And so we try to cheat. And then whatever we don't pay must be extracted from everywhere else. And again, we are stealing from all of those around us. Hogwash, exclaimed the captain. There are so many bad and useless things that our taxes go towards. Surely so, I agreed. But in that case, we should stand up and speak out openly and honestly to correct those wrongs, even go so far as to refuse to pay a wrong and harmful tax if need be, and then suffer gladly whatever consequences there may be for us personally, but not by sneaking around like little thieves, actually taking from everyone else. And it's the same when you work for someone. I mean, that's another very common form of stealing, unaware. Someone hires you to work for so many hours a day, for so much money each hour, and most often you are glad for the chance at first, and then slowly you get lazy or dissatisfied, and it becomes a game of doing as little work as you can during your appointed hours, talking with friends, drinking tea, avoiding extra tasks. And you see, the employer, he's not stupid. He will get the work done by taking extra time and effort from others who will give or must give it. And then again, you have failed to carry out your fair share, what you have promised to carry by accepting the job in the first place. And again, you are stealing from others their most precious time. But what about if the employer is hard or unpleasant to you? What if they are unfair when it comes to respecting your needs and your precious lifetime? Again, that's a separate issue, I pressed on. From our side, we must demonstrate integrity and continue to work as we have first promised to work until we choose to leave that job. And if unfair or improper demands are put on us, or put upon anyone else around us for that matter, then we must have the courage to stand up openly and work to change it, whatever the apparent consequences to ourselves. For remember, a good action cannot bring a bad result. Impossible. The captain took the very tiniest glance at one of the stacks of reports to his side and then brought his eyes back. And I think of one more way in which we can steal from others without being aware of it, I said. It is when we steal from the others around us who do not have enough to eat or to clothe or shelter themselves. It is when we steal from our own children for generations to come by using the resources around us selfishly and wastefully. Every time we use a thing we don't really need, every time we eat food far beyond what our bodies require, every time we have extra anything when others have none, then we are stealing from the resources that all of us share and that people who come after us will need. And this surely plants a seed within us, constant seeds, countless seeds that will deny us all that free and perfect wealth which the Master spoke of. With that, the captain sat up and openly gazed at the stacks of paper around him, chewing on a thumbnail nervously. And then he finally sighed and said, "We have to talk about something." "Next class," I replied, and again there was that same chuckle from somewhere outside the room, and I pulled him up for his poses.